Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And now we're going to do something a little bit chancy for a radio program. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about visual art, specifically contemporary visual art. I say it's a bit chancy because radio is a sound medium, and to talk about visual arts without being able to experience it visually might come across as, well, I don't know, maybe pretentious, maybe even boring.
But we assure you, Anthony and I would never have a conversation that's boring, especially today, because we're going to be talking to Helen Molesworth, the curator of Boston's Institute of Contemporary Art. She is passionate about art, and she's willing and able to articulate her passion in a way that is understandable and accessible on one hand, and deep and thoughtful on the other. The Boston Globe has described her as one of the greatest curators of our time.
So some pretty high praise there. Helen Molesworth is a distinguished scholar, writer, and curator who came to the ICA 2.5 years ago from the Harvard Art Museums, where she was in charge of the modern and contemporary art departments. She joined the ICA at an important time in the institution's history. A few years earlier, back in 2006, the ICA became the first new art museum to be built in Boston in almost 100 years. Today, it attracts some 200,000 visitors a year. And Helen Molesworth, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to see you again.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having
me. Sure. So I was in the ICA this morning, and I want to talk to you about what's happening there right now. But first, I'm interested in the moment in your life that sort of set your course toward art. Was there one moment when you knew that you were hooked?
I don't know if I could say that there's one moment, because I feel that I was incredibly fortunate as a kid. I had parents who took me to museums. I grew up in New York City. I grew up in the 70s and the 80s really feeling like MoMA and the Metropolitan and the Frick belonged to me, which is incredibly vain, but it was how I experienced them as a kid. And I think I always knew at some level I wanted to work in museums because I really, really love them.
Well, what did you love about them? I mean, what clicked with you?
Well, I have two very early memories. One, I think like many young people, I was fascinated with the Temple of Dendur, and I wanted, of course, to be an Egyptologist. I was fascinated by the idea that there were these pictograms or hieroglyphics and that it was a language different from ours and that not everyone knew it and it had to be decoded. And I found that very exciting. And then I had another kind of, you know, moment of realization. As a young person, I was lucky enough to go to Sweden, where I saw Robert Rauschenberg's very famous sculpture Monogram, which for your viewers, or your listeners rather, excuse me, who don't know it, it's a canvas that's been placed on the floor. And on top of that canvas is a stuffed goat. And around that goat's belly is a tire. And I saw that when I was 11. And that really, really turned me on, because I had no idea what that thing was about. But I just knew as a kid that I wanted to be near something that weird, that cool, that unknowable.
That's great. That sounds like a great description of contemporary art. Weird, cool, unknowable.
Yep.
Is that the best way to describe it?
Well, I think there are a lot of ways to describe contemporary art. I think that, that weird, cool, and unknowable are certainly some of the things an average viewer feels in the ICA. I think for me, I think the reason I'm interested in contemporary art is because I see contemporary artists as people who are basically trying to navigate all of the contradictions that the world gives us. And so for me, they're often like a Sherpa. You know, if I don't understand something about myself or something about the world, for me, contemporary art is often a place where I get some clues, some guidelines about how someone else might be processing all of this enormous amount of information that we live with every day.
I'm interested how you became, or sort of how you got on the road to become a curator. I know you originally thought you wanted to be an art professor, right?
I did an art history professor. Yeah. My father's a professor. And I always say that I'm really lucky he wasn't a coal miner because I would have wanted to be a coal miner. You know, like the apple didn't drop very far from the tree. But I found that I preferred ultimately to teaching, working with artists and actually working with the so-called general public, which I guess is another way of saying I really like a voluntary audience as opposed to a mandatory one. You know, when you teach, kids fall asleep in your lecture class. And right.
So you had some experience with that, where you looked out at a classroom of kids and you thought, man, I wish they felt the way I did about this.
I did. And yet, if they didn't, I felt like that was also okay. I just wanted to be in a room with more people who had chosen to be in that room, so to speak.
Yeah. And I'm interested to know to you what it means to you to be a curator. And by that, I'm thinking about what the word itself means, right? It means to care. I mean, isn't that the root? So relate that to what you do, that idea of caring.
It's such a great question because the Latin root of curator does mean to care. And curators historically were people who cared for the collection of the king, the Vatican, the aristocracy. And then the role of the public museum curator was often conceived of as a person who cared for the objects that had national patrimony, you know, that told the story of the nation as it wanted its story to be told. Contemporary curators now have a very different kind of role. We still care for the objects in our collection, and we still strive to ensure that those objects will be around for the centuries in the future. But we also are much more driven now by the act of selecting. So the contemporary art world is enormous, and one of my primary jobs is to survey that field and choose which artists I feel are best for the institution or the city that I happen to be working in. And I think in addition to choosing artists, the other job of the curator is to, in a way, act as a kind of diplomatic translator. We bring news from the art world to the general public, and we bring news of the general public back to artists. And we are very much a translator, I think.
Listeners, we're talking with Helen Molesworth. She's chief curator of the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston, and we want to invite you into this conversation. What's your question for Helen Molesworth? How do you assess the state, the role, the health of contemporary art in Boston? How do you feel about contemporary art in general? Does it confuse or intimidate you? Does it excite you? Does it speak to you as it does to Helen? We're taking your calls and questions right now at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and all at Radio Boston. Helen, I'd love to talk to you about what's going on at the museum right now. I was at the ICA this morning looking at a brand new exhibit by Josiah McElhaney, right?
Correct.
Which you curated. He's known for sculptures, for prints, for film. But this exhibit is all about glass blowing.
Right.
And this small idea of some pictures of the infinite.
I know, it's so ridiculous, isn't it, that we made a show about the picture of a thing that you can't make a picture of, which is infinity. It's just such hubris.
Well, I thought it was sort of great because once you sort of, you know, I read that as I came in and I thought, oh man, from glass blowing to pictures of the infinite. But then right away, and this is sort of what I love about museums and trying to figure out art myself, is something that I've been looking at all my life, like Venetian glass from Murano, you know, in those swirls that go into the middle. Mm-hmm. And here's this artist talking about these swirls as being a sort of explanation of the infinite,
right,
and the mystery and the unknowability of it all. And I found that very exciting.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm very happy with the show. Josiah McElhaney is an amazing artist, and he has, for the past 25 years, really been tackling the problem of how to represent time. And it's so ineffable, as we know. I mean, we understand that there's a past, and we expect there will be a future, and we kind of muddle through the present and don't really understand how to be present, as our Buddhist brothers and sisters are always helping us to understand. But Josiah's really been interested in the way the past is always with us in the present, and the way we inherit a present that's made for us by others, but that we, part of our task as citizens, is to imagine what present do we want for ourselves, what kind of future can we leave for the people who are coming. And he's quite compelling in that regard, I think.
And complex. One of the pieces that I wanted to ask you about, and actually we have a little clip of tape from him. I was really struck by this piece. It was called Czech Modernism Mirrored and Reflected Infinitely, which shows the reflection of beautiful glass pieces. And they're just a few of them, but he's mounted them in such a way that there's sort of this endless reflection no matter how you look at it. And they seem to go on forever and ever into the wall. And then what's really disturbing is you think you're looking into a mirror, but you don't see yourself.
Right.
This is heavy. So this is here is the artist, Josiah McElhenney. He spoke to my colleague, Andrea Shea, about this particular piece earlier this week.
Anything that's endlessly repeated is a terror. And basically, because we are not infinitely repeated, we change, we transform ourselves, and we respond to what happens to us and what will happen to us. And so the idea that you could build a world based on infinite repetition is a very evil one.
Evil. I'm not sure. I didn't take away evil from that, but comment in any way you want. I love hearing him talk about that.
It's such a complicated piece, and it's in the collection at the ICA. So I think a lot of your listeners may have seen it. And what you see is this mise en abîme, literally this infinite optical illusion where these mirrored glass vases appear to go on forever and ever. And most people, when they see it at first, I think are filled with a sense of wonder, a sense of, oh my God, how does this work? How did he do this? You know there's a little trick involved. Oh. You're really curious about it. And then they walk away. And I think sometimes they walk away thinking it's really cool, but I think some people walk away realizing, wow, I didn't see myself in any of those mirrors. And that's really creepy, to see a mirrored world in which you yourself are not reflected.
I got to admit, it's what stayed with me. And it occurred to me sort of after the fact, as I was walking away, and I said, wait a minute, I need to go back and look again.
It's funny how that piece works. There's always a delay. Very few people realize when they're standing in front of it that they can't see themselves. Yeah. They realize it after. And then another thing, of course, you realize after is that a world of objects that are all the same, which in many ways is the dream world of capitalism, right? That we'll all buy the same car, or we'll all buy the same Campbell's soup, like Warhol told us to, is a scary world, right? That it's a world that assumes that our sameness trumps our difference. And I think that's why Josiah thinks the piece represents the evilness of sameness.
We're talking to Helen Molesworth. She's the chief curator of the Institute of Contemporary Art. Please join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And let's go to Daniel, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Daniel. You're on with Helen Molesworth.
Hi, Helen. How's it going?
Pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Hey, thanks for having me on. So my question, I think you might have already dived into it. That is about technology in art and interactive exhibits. I was curious if you see a lot of demand for interactive exhibits, especially with more technology.
Yes, interactivity is a kind of buzzword right now in contemporary art, and I think that the interactivity happens both at the level of technology, people touching screens or realizing that their body is activating some kind of sound or light. But there's also a demand for interactivity in terms of performance, of having performers be in the galleries to answer questions or to stage little plays or dancing in the galleries, all of which those types of things happen at the ICA. But there is a sense that people want a kind of physical, emotional, social connection with other people, and that is something that the museum is not a virtual place. It's a very real place, and I think people crave that kind of interactivity.
Daniel, thanks so much for that call. Helen, you've said that people can get very anxious about contemporary art, and I know what you're talking about, but I'd like you to be more specific about that and what advice you give folks who feel that, I'm not sure I know how to approach this high-minded, weird stuff.
Yeah, contemporary art is a lot like contemporary science or contemporary math. There are parts of it that are very, very highly evolved, that are, you know, kind of working at the threshold of our most extreme forms of knowledge. Hmm. And then there's other contemporary art that's still working on 500-year-old problems, like how to represent the three-dimensional world on a two-dimensional plane. But I think that contemporary art makes people nervous because it's brand new. And because it's brand new, it means that we all haven't collectively figured out what it means yet, which is, of course, precisely what turns me on about it, that because we don't know what it means, there's a lot of opportunity for conversation and dialogue and back and forth. I always recommend that people, one, don't be nervous. I don't understand a lot of it, and I'm an expert. Two, go with a friend. Talk about it. Three, be dumb. Right. So when you're standing in front of an object, ask it, what am I made out of? And if it's made out of glass and metal, that's already a fair amount of information that's really different than pencil and paper. You know, like ask dumb questions. Ask, how does it make me feel? Mm. If I were this art object, what would I do? Like really dopey stuff, but that somehow allows you to get your body into the object, that allows you to let the object sort of, I don't know, flirt with you a little bit.
Sure. And what about the big question, and maybe in some cases the dumbest question, is it art? And I'm wondering if that's among the questions that you have to struggle with as curator. You know, when I'm thinking, you know, I've stared up at the Sistine Chapel, and it's like, you know, obviously what Michelangelo did up there was art. But then it was actually in the same week that I had been able to see that kind of art. I stood in line for an hour in Florence to get into a Damien Hirst exhibit. And I got in, and I was surrounded by men with machine guns, and I was allowed to see the entire exhibit, which consisted of a human skull cast in platinum, encrusted with hundreds and hundreds of diamonds. And then I was ushered back out into the corridor.
And were there really men with guns standing around the skull?
Yeah, they really were. And if you leaned in a little bit too much, they said, "Up, not so close." But when my wife and I got out into the corridor, we thought we were going in to see more art. But we were ushered out in the corridor, and we just looked at each other and said, "Come on, he was having us on." I mean, that joke was at our expense, wasn't it? Now, I'm not asking you to defend Damien Hirst, but I'm just saying at some point, I think this is a question that we all struggle with. It's like, was that really art, that experience I just had? Or were the men with the machine guns in the ante room and the long lines and the security and the 20 euro ticket and then sort of this bizarre experience of being ushered in and out all inside of 90 seconds and being told that I just had a transcendent experience with an international artist. You know, it left me befuddled and lost.
I think that your response is fair. I, too, have seen the Damien Hirst diamond-encrusted skull. I saw it in London in his gallery, so there weren't armed guards, and thank God I didn't have to spend 20 euros to see it. It's a very big question, the is it art question, of course, because you could ask the same in many ways of Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel ceiling, which was a ceiling never meant to be seen the way we see it now. Mm-hmm. It was not meant to be seen in a museum-type setting, which it's currently sort of structured as. It was in a chamber meant for prayer and, you know, religious reflection, which is not what's happening now in the room with the Sistine Chapel. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the last 100 years, the question, is it art, has vexed us. It's vexed us since Marcel Duchamp bought a urinal and submitted it to an art exhibition calling it Fountain. I happen to have written my dissertation on that object, so I'm obsessed with the is it art question. And the easiest way to answer that question is, if it's in a museum, it's art, or at least it's being valued as art because the experts have all decided it should be treated as such. Another way of asking the question is, what else could it be? Like, what else is Damien Hirst's diamond-encrusted skull but art? I mean, what other category does it fit into? Art does also happen to function as a kind of catch-all category. But the real question is not, is it art, which is a tricky philosophical question. But I think for the average viewer, the better question is it good art? And there I think we could have a different kind of conversation about the Damien Hirst skull.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, a lot more people want to get in this conversation. We've got a little more time. So let's go to Dave from Dorchester. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is for Helen. I'm curious about not necessarily what is art, but what does art do and who is it for? Because so often the verbiage of art and art museums is about social justice, but it's very hard for me to see an actual connection. So I'd really like to hear from Helen something about that, because this is something that I have a very hard time really being convinced of.
Well, that's it's an interesting question. It's one close to my heart, since I'm interested in both the field of art and social justice and how they might be related. I think at its most aspirational, at its most expansive, art asks us to be empathetic. And by that, I mean that it asks us to imagine that someone made a thing and someone else chose it and someone else hung it up on the wall. And a lot of people did a lot of things. And it asks us to sort of think, what is it like to think and feel or see as if we are someone else? It asks us to step outside of our own framework of perception and to imagine the world as others see it. And for me, that's a real strong continuity with how we talk about social justice, right? So one of the things we're asking for instance, in the marriage equality debate, we're asking, you know, as a gay person, I'm asking other non-gay people to see me in a different kind of way, right? I'm asking them to be empathetic. I'm asking people to open up their hearts and minds and see the world differently. And I think art, when it's functioning at its very, very highest and its very best, is asking us to do that.
Dave, great question, and thanks for putting it to us. Helen, I have, let's see, we just have about a minute left, so I'm not sure we have time to go into this, but I'm going to try to ask it anyway, but just keep in mind we have just a few seconds left. I'm interested in the building itself, the ICA. It's so impressive. The setting is so spectacular there on Boston Harbor. How does that affect or inform your work as a curator?
Well, I feel very lucky because the building is a destination. The waterfront is a destination. So we get a lot of people to come to the waterfront. People are generally in a good mood when they're at the water. And I think that that helps bestow upon the ICA a general sense of good moodness. Realize that's terrible verbiage that one of your callers was accusing us of. But I do think that the ICA is a great building, and it contributes to an extraordinary experience of contemporary art.
And the next major show you're curating is going to feature Artists of the 1980s, opening in the fall. Do I have that right?
That is correct. But come down now and see Josiah McElhaney before then.
You can see Josiah McElhaney's extraordinary exhibit at the Institute of Contemporary Art. Helen Molesworth, Chief Curator of the Institute of Contemporary Art. Such a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Listeners, the conversation continues at RadioBoston.com. Stay with us. Coming up, our picks for the weekend ahead and a preview of tomorrow's TEDx conference. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Trakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.